welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. If you live in Kenosha and enjoy musical theater, then surely you have enjoyed the work of Holly Stanfield over the years. She has presided over a whole host of amazing musical theater productions here in Kenosha. She has just retired, or is about to retire. Her final KUSD production is of a great musical called Between the Lines, with performances this Thursday and Friday before cast and crew move on to the International Thespian Festival. Ahead of that, I wanted to speak with Holly Stanfield one more time. This is an interview we recorded last week, and it was actually too lengthy to fit into our broadcast slot. But if you listen to the podcast version of The Morning Show, you can hear this interview in its entirety with the great Holly Stanfield. Yeah. Let's talk a little more about Between the Lines specifically. First of all, what sort of unfolds as this young girl is sort of escaping into the world of reading? I mean, give us at least a general sense of the kind of adventures that await her.
So she is under stress at school, and you see the whole context that she's dealing with. She befriends Jules, who is a non-binary student, and they become close. So in that land, you kind of see that part of the show. In her connection with Prince Oliver does not want to live the same single story every single day of his life. Mm. He would like some freedom to make his own choices. And as a book character, he has no choice. He's not particularly in love with the woman that he is betrothed to at the end of the story. Mm. He doesn't like fighting dragons. So he would prefer actually to be in Delilah's world. And Delilah, because she is so stressed with her own life situation, says, wait a minute, I'm not sure you understand that, yes, I have choice, but this is really tough out here. She really gets to a point where she's so stressed at school that she goes out onto her roof to read, and that's kind of her escape from the stress at home with her parents, you know, arguing through their divorce. And you don't know actually if she jumps on purpose or if she falls. That's never clear in the story.
Wow.
We have kind of shaped it that she probably just loses track of where she is and falls. But in the real part of the story, she falls off the roof, ends in the hospital. And that's kind of a moment where her mom and her have a moment to reconnect, and that's great. And as far as Prince Oliver, that's at the end of the first act. And when she wakes up, she's in the book.
Mm.
And so she gets to experience what it is to be in that environment. And he proposes, and she's like, whoa, that's a little fast.
Mm.
And wants to continue to have control of her life. So the thing about the book is that every time you close the book, it resets because it's a book. So any adventures that have happened outside of the context of reading the book. So all of the adventures in the book are when the book is closed for the fairy tale characters, because as he says, well, you think we cease to exist when you close a book?
Mm.
They have their own lives. But when the book is open, they have to do their act.
And
so every time the book closes, it resets. So they close the book, she gets bounced back out into the real world. And then it's kind of bittersweet in the end, because she is truly in love with Prince Oliver. But it kind of tells you what literature and what we find in the arts for ourselves and how we grow through that relationship with our literature and with the messages and music and art and everything else that surrounds us when we become attached to it, how that shapes us. Hmm. And how she learns from that experience how to cope with the real world.
Wow. So how large a cast are we talking about? I mean, how many people populate Delilah's world versus Prince Oliver's world?
We have a cast of 27, and we have a crew of 13.
Hmm.
So that's the group of young people that we are working with.
Wow.
And they're wonderful.
And so it sounds like the kind of story where a fair amount of stage magic, so to speak, is called for?
Yes. A lot of that is done with projection. And we've been very fortunate to work with a company Broadway Media, and they actually have a lot of the original slides from the original off-Broadway production, and we've been able to work with that. So there's definitely some projection stuff happening that helps.
Clarify for me exactly what your role is with this production. I mean, are you the director or the stage director or the musical director or both of those? Or, I mean, exactly what is your role?
My role is I am the stage director, which I am sharing that direction with Benjamin Woods. So we are co-directors this time. And I've done that several times. I just think it's wonderful to bring some of the younger people in and work with them. And so Ben has been an incredible addition to what we have done. He's brought so much knowledge from his training at SMU. And we've learned some new warm-up activities and some new ways to think about things. So that's been awesome.
Great. Well, and just if I may interject, Ben is a Kenosha kid, so to speak,
yes.
And was on stage in productions that you directed. And so,
yep.
I mean, in some respects, he's a protege, and I should think that feels just wonderful to now have this new relationship with him.
Oh, it is absolutely wonderful. So he and I have been co-director, and I also did all of the vocal work for the show. So I do the ensemble work and the solo work and that kind of stuff.
So you were telling me earlier that the full-fledged show was done back in October, and then in January you did the junior version of it.
Yes.
And was that with the same cast?
Mostly. We had a few kids that flowed out of it and a few kids that flowed into it. So actually, as we are approaching the summer, we've kind of merged both of the casts and expanded it.
Yeah. So what is it like, I don't know how often that occurs, where a student is in the full-fledged production versus then the scaled back or abridged, lightened junior version? Is that kind of a strange, interesting maybe even sometimes disconcerting experience for them, or not particularly?
Yeah, I think when you look at something for a second time and you have to relearn scenes and they're cut and they're changed and the language is changed and the number of verses you're doing in a song, some of the keys were changed. Yes, that is new learning, and at times that's confusing, but they're brilliant, you know. And actually, when you get to work further in a show, we've actually taken some moments from the junior version choreographically and expanded them and brought it back to this show so that it makes this show probably a little tighter and cleaner.
Very good. So was this a case where you were sort of unveiling for the world for the first time the junior version of Between the Lines?
Yes, I believe there was one other production in Texas. So we Heather Biddle did it down in Texas, and we did it in Wisconsin. So there have been two high schools that have piloted the work, and the author has come and seen both. They just want to see how it plays on teenage bodies, how audiences react to it, so that when they put the literature out, since it's a pilot, they have a sense of that it's going to work.
Very good. So we've made mention of these two performances coming up on Thursday and Friday, June 20th and 21st, and then a couple of days later, cast and crew and you are off to Bloomington, Indiana. For listeners who aren't acquainted with this, describe this huge event, which occurs, I think, every single year, and in which Kenosha Unified students have participated in a really meaningful way for as long as I can remember. Describe what this big national event exactly is and what it's like.
So this is under the umbrella of the Educational Theater Association. So this is not a commercial venue. This is an educational organization that brings students and teachers from across the country, and actually Canada, and I think there are a few foreign countries that are also a part of this. So it brings us together in a big umbrella, and they sponsor the International Thespian Festival every summer, and that brings kids from across the country and Canada, and again, oftentimes a few other foreign countries, to present works for one another. Do workshops with theater education and industry professionals. So it's just an incredible week of theater and seeing performances and supporting one another and hearing stories and connecting, and it's just incredible.
So your cast and crew will then do a full-fledged performance of Between the Lines at this festival, is that right?
Yes, we are the main stage production in the IU Auditorium on Tuesday, and we'll do two shows, one in the afternoon and one in the evening.
Hmm. My one time at this event was many years ago. Maybe we'll talk about it a little further. When KUSD was helped pilot and premiere the junior version of Elton John and Tim Rice's Aida. And so that was in Lincoln, Nebraska. One of my memories of that, being in the pit, I was first keyboard for that. I loved the experience, start to finish, here in Kenosha and in Lincoln. But one of the things that struck me was you just had this palpable sense that these young people were performing for a truly extraordinary audience of other young people who really could appreciate on a very profound level what they were seeing on that stage. And I didn't know what to expect, but I mean, on one level, I thought it might be just a bunch of screaming kids just clapping for everything and, you know. But no, it's hard to put in words, but there was just this sense of understanding that the young people in that, and not just young people, but largely young people from other schools across the country, were watching that performance of Aida and taking it in a truly profound manner. And I was just thinking, what a wonderful experience for the cast of Aida in that case to be performing for an audience like that.
Well, they call it the Broadway of high school theater, and you and I have both been to a lot of professional theater. So you know when you walk into a Broadway house that you have expectations.
Mm.
And part of that is that unlike a movie where actually once in a while when you walk into a movie theater, you think, oh, there's not a lot of people here. Great. I get the screen to myself. I get this whole experience. And actually, I'm saying this because I've seen a TED Talk on this, but I truly think this is the best way to describe it. But when you walk into a theater, you walk in to experience it with other people.
That's part of the point.
It is. Well, but you don't want to walk into a half full house. You want to walk into a full house where everybody's going to be focused on that stage and the performers are going to do something for you and you're going to experience everything together emotionally in a moment. And the more people there, the better. So the best part about ITF is that it's sort of like Broadway. We come in, many of us, informed about what we're going to see. We love it. We're schooled. We live passionately to see things and experience things together. And these kids come from all across the country and they are an informed audience.
Hmm.
They might not know the show, but trust me, they've already looked up the authors. And it's actually out there. You played a clip, so they're already listening to it. And they come and they want to hear and they want to be a part of this experience. And when there's 3,000 of them in one space doing that, it is an energy that you just, there's nothing like it on the face of the planet.
It's true. It absolutely is true. What is involved in such an invitation being issued? I mean, for instance, for Between the Lines. I mean, what had to occur in order for Between the Lines to make it to Bloomington, Indiana?
Well, years ago, they would send adjudicators. Years ago, they would send two adjudicators to go through a rubric and make a recommendation to ITF as to whether we were main stage worthy or not. And usually there's been a good number of schools that have applied from across the country for these moments. After the pandemic, there was a more limited offering because they were just building the venue back up and they were in a new place. We had traveled from Lincoln and now we're in Bloomington. Pardon me. And so when we took Groundhog a couple of years ago, there were really only six shows there. So that was huge to be one of those six shows.
Mm.
This year there will be nine, so it's expanding a little bit. But we send in videotape now, and they take a look at the videotape, and then they make an offer.
Very good. So over the years, how often has a Kenosha Unified show been a part of the proceedings in this really exciting way?
Well, many times.
You have lost count, perhaps.
Someplace between 15 and 17 times. And this all began because I got to experience this as a child.
Hmm.
When I came to Kenosha, I came from Shorewood High School, And my teacher was Barbara Gensler, who actually is a Kenosha native. And we did four shows a year, and she took us to the International Festival, and I got to be Mrs. Malloy on the main stage in Hello, Dolly. And it was such a special experience for me that after I moved into the teaching position in Kenosha, I thought, you know, maybe we should be doing a little more of that here, because I had such a great experience as a child in Shorewood. You know, I just think maybe we should do a few more shows here and there, and maybe we should go to the state festival, and maybe we should go to the international festival. And, you know, maybe we're good enough for the main stage this year. Let's give that a shot. And we began with Godspell, and that was a wonderful thing. And I just remember the kids being there for the first time, sitting in the balcony, and one of them leaned over. There was a wonderful school from Hawaii, and they did, let's see, Sweet Charity. And they had boy dancers that could do triples on a dime, and my kids' mouths were on the floor. And they came up afterwards and said, "We do not belong here." And I said, "Oh, yes, you do, because Godspell is not Sweet Charity. That's a dance show. You're doing a show that's about improvisation and Old Testament stories, and it's going to be fabulous." And they got the same reaction from the crowd, of course, that the opening show got, and they were amazed by the experience, and the festival was very impressed. And the next year, we took The Mystery of Edwin Drood, and that was also a big success on the stage. And that's when the head of the Educational Theater Association called and said, "Hey, would you guys like to be the directing school for the next national cast?" And that would be the school edition of Thoroughly Modern Millie. So I went and saw a rehearsal of the national cast of Ragtime that year, just to see the process. I was sitting in the crowd with John Pignano, who is my contact, one of the upper people at MTI, and Michael Peitz, who was the head of EDTA. And John looked at Michael and said, "Hey, we need someone to do the school edition of Aida. Do you know anybody?" And Michael said, "Well, just ask Holly. She's sitting next to you." And John looked at me and said, "You know those videos that nobody's supposed to have?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Could you send me a few of those videos?" And I said, "Sure." So I sent him a couple MTI projects that we had done, and he made the offer for Aida School Edition, and it's kind of been a relationship ever since then.
Wow.
Yeah.
I do want to talk a little more about Aida and some other memorable shows from over the years, but let me first reintroduce you. I'm speaking today on The Morning Show with Holly Stanfield. For many years, a central figure in musical theater here in the Kenosha Unified School District, but she has retired as of the end of this year. Actually, school's still going on for a couple more days, right?
Yeah, they're in exams.
But anyway, we are looking back on her career and also looking ahead to two performances of Between the Lines, which is then going to be taken to the International Thespian Festival in Bloomington, Indiana, a few days after these performances on Thursday and Friday. By the way, when we're talking about this big festival, I know that, of course, I mean, it's kind of like a crown jewel achievement to be on the main stage, as will be the case with Between the Lines. But there are other things that go on. And I remember my niece Lorelei, Lorelei Amborn, being at an international thespian festival and experiencing something else that was of a smaller kind of workshop nature. And I'm trying to remember the show that she was part of, but it was kind of a thing of sharing things on kind of a more modest scale. Can you just explain some of these other things that go on at the festival that even beyond the splashy main stage productions?
Oh, absolutely. There's also a smaller venue, which would be Chapter Select, which means that each state in the country has an opportunity to send a one act, sort of like the state festival. We're not connected to the state festival but directly, but yes, they can do that. So there can be a 30-minute version of a play. Workshops. Lorelei actually came with me to Florida last year. And actually, that was for the teacher workshop, but also did a similar workshop at ITF last year. we did a very important musical called Trevor.
Right. That's the one. Yeah.
Yep. Which
that I was thinking of.
Yeah. Which was a show about a young man who was questioning his gender and sexuality and was finding a way to be his authentic self. And it was a very incredible story that we did in our studio theater. Again, the author came with John Pignano to see it, and John said, you know, I think we should do a workshop about this. So Lorelei and a bunch of the cast, and actually I was on the way home to help deliver my grandchild, so I missed that moment because he came a little bit early, but that's okay. But it was an incredibly moving workshop for everybody that was there because the kids could speak to the fact that they were one of the first schools, or I think they actually were the first school to do the show, and what an important piece it was, and how it felt to do that with an audience in a small room, and really let people from across the country hear about that experience and share it. And actually, they're going to be featured again, I think, in some kind of literature that's going to come out in the next couple months from MTI. So Lorelei was gracious enough to type me a few answers to some questions that they sent again about that. So again, it's just all about, so there are moments like that at the festival where kids can talk about their experiences with things. There's playwrights. There are young playwrights there that put up stage readings of their shows. There's a new musical works. They have a film little festival that happens. They probably one of the most moving experiences that we ever had at the festival is the shows of the Scottsboro Boys.
Yeah.
Which is just an amazing piece of theater. You know, I have been to a lot of theater, as have you, and oftentimes I am a musical theater artist, and that is something that is part of my gifts. I go to a lot of theater that does not have music, and oftentimes I find that I am much more emotionally involved when it's a play that doesn't take me out of the context of reality as much.
Right.
So my biggest emotional moments probably on Broadway and any place are with plays. For example, Bob, what's this? That's terrible. Well, anyways, the Goodman Theater, Robert Falls production of, my mind is leaving me at this age, Greg. Actually, it's not. It's just I only got 4 hours of sleep because we were at a festival last night. But
course.
That's okay.
Of course.
What was it? Anyways, a great Shakespeare piece directed by Robert Fall. And I just walked out of the theater trembling. I mean, tingling. There it is. Or to see The Goater, who is Sylvia, with Sally Field in a small, intimate theater on Broadway. And again, I just had a hard time standing up and walking out of the theater. I was so moved. I love musicals, and I'm very moved by them, but I'm not in that way involved oftentimes, except for the Scottsboro Boys. I saw that in a small theater on Broadway, and I had a hard time standing up after I left the show. And when I spoke to John Prignano after seeing it, he said, you know, that'd be really great to do in a high school someday. And I said, yeah, that would be awesome. And then we had auditions 1 year, and I had 9 amazing young black men. And it's such an amazing story.
And Ben was one of them, the aforementioned Ben Woods.
He was, yes. Yeah. And I called John Prignano, and I said, hey, I think I've got the show. And so he reached out to the author and Susan Stroman, the creative person that created it. And they said, okay. And we brought in 3 equity actors to surround the young men. And we did that as a late night show. So once we had the show, then I talked to the head of the festival, then Nancy Brown, and we could only go every other year to the main stage. Because actually we went so many years in a row that they finally said, you know, maybe we should just do every other year. Let some other people have an opportunity, which I totally agreed with. But I had the show, and it was in the off year. And so I said, Nancy, can we just do a workshop, a late night workshop? Could we bring the authors in and we'll just do a few songs? And she said, no, I think you should do the whole thing. And I said, okay. She said, so it'll just be a late night show. I said, okay. She said, you just have to find a venue. So we found an amazing venue that was actually from the earlier part of the last century that I believe still had seating for people of color.
Wow.
In the balcony. There was just benches, not seats.
Wow.
So it was just, it was incredible. And we did the show, and since it wasn't part of the main stage series or part of the festival, people actually had to get tickets for it. So we were putting the show in during the day, and it was not very far from campus. We were walkable distance. And all of a sudden, there was a line forming, and there were just hundreds of people with their blankets sitting out waiting to get tickets for the show.
Wow.
So that they could get in. They literally sat for hours outside to see that show.
Incredible.
And, yeah, and then we did it, and you know, just the reaction. Susan Stroman said the next day, you know, when you write a piece, you sit in the audience and you expect, if you're doing the producers, for people to just have a wonderful night of laughter and they're vivacious and happy and go have a couple of drinks after the show. She said, or if you do Contact, another thing that she directed, people are getting closer and tighter because it's such a personal story. But when they did the Scottsboro Boys, she said people just stood and they were either very quiet or they were in very intense conversation when they walked out of the show. And that definitely is the experience that our young people had there.
Right.
You just saw kids crying or sober, or you could see the conversations beginning. Uh-huh. And then the next day with Susan Stroman, the workshop was packed for our kids to share their experience and for the kids to hear and to open a conversation about how culture needs to change. And theater makes a safe space. We walk in again knowing that we're going to have this experience, and oftentimes it can open doors to conversations that need to happen, and it is a safe place to begin those conversations.
Right. And of course, that's, I think, been an interesting hallmark of the work that you and your colleagues have done over the years, is that sometimes it's relatively fluffy shows, but almost always there's a pretty powerful message in there someplace. And mm-hmm. then sometimes it's very much all about the message. And of course, that's where this becomes even more ground-shaking for the young people that are part of it. I mean, probably for some of them, it's the very first serious conversations that they've had about some of the profoundly serious topics that that are part of these shows that might not be directly part of their lives at all.
Truth. But what we really teach, and you know this so well because you do it as well, is we teach connection.
Hmm.
We teach young people how to take down walls. That's why it's as important as anything that's offered in the public system. Athletics does that as well, but in a different way. And when you walk into a context where you are using words and you're putting that together with your whole physicality, and then eventually having the courage to share that with your community, that is something that teaches profound communication. And if we lose it, we're in trouble.
Mm, for sure. And of course, also part of this experience is the collaboration of all the moving parts, all of the different people who have to collaborate in order to bring something either to a big main stage or to something as intimate as your studio theater. I mean, just that overused term of teamwork is something, it seems to me, that in this day and age where so much is more and more about the individual and their experience and their own perspective and desires and so on, there's just something about being something that is literally much bigger than you are. And it seems to me musical theater, theater in general, and lots of musical experiences as well, are really an incredible way to experience that.
It is. And, you know, I know that this is my moment to leave KUSD, but everything I do is done as a team. You know, you go to all these education workshops at the beginning of the year, and they're like, well, you have to work with your team. And I thought, oh, my gosh, well, we work every moment together. So Jody Williams and Christy Geidner and the other people that have, you know, graced our team over the years, Kristen Singer and all of the choral directors that have done such a great training job, Polly Amborn and John Che and all of the middle school staff. And, you know, it really takes all of these people, even if it's not directly working on the show, to make this happen. And you're just, I think the coolest thing that has kind of followed me from my early days at Reuther was that we started doing things together. And that's totally changed the community.
I think you're right.
It really has. And, you know, you do it simply because it just starts to happen. And my boss, Larry Simon, was the one that supported that at the beginning of this whole thing. But when you watch the kids, that's the big part. You know, when you watch them see each other at a football game and it's like, ah, they're my friends from, you know, Bradford. They're my friends from Tremper. They're my friends from St. Joe's. I mean, you know, all over. And again, it's creating community. And again, that's my big thing. I think that I've come to feel about what I have done working in the public system is that when we bring people together, a lot of that fear and a lot of that separation drops away, and you know the people in your community, and you know when you meet people that are like them from other cultures that you're going to have less fear to interact with them and to be around them. And again, it's a gigantic part of what we're doing in public schools.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned the thing about different schools. That's been the reality for such a long time that it's sadly easy to take for granted, but you know it doesn't happen everywhere. And that's also one thing that distinguishes this from athletics, for all the good that can do. At the end, I mean, we don't have football players from Tremper and Bradford and Indian Trails on the same team. I mean, they are...
Well, not till the NFL, so there you go.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. There you go. So there's so many things that make this valuable and meaningful and also plain fun. I mean, we've touched on a lot of heaviness, and it's interesting how when I think back to the great things I've seen over the years that often it's been the shows like Scottsboro Boys and Violet and so on that leave a very powerful impression. And then on the other hand, you go to something like Something Rotten, laugh your head off all night long. And that's part of this, too. I mean, in some ways, that really reminds us of the astonishing expanse that is musical theater in terms of all the different kinds of experiences it can bring to you.
Absolutely. It's a large form. Opera, musical theater, they umbrella so many other parts of the arts. I mean, you're going to have visual experience. You're going to have a musical experience. You're going to have a visceral theater experience. You're going to have a dance experience. And it just, you know, they say that you sing when you cannot talk. And you dance when singing's just not enough.
Right.
Yeah.
Very, very true. So have you faced up to the reality of not doing this anymore or not doing it in the way that you've done it before? I mean, and do you anticipate somehow still being a part of this community and this kind of work, even in retirement?
I don't know. I mean, at this point, it's kind of crazy. Our friend David Scripsema, when he left, I said, David, you can't leave. How can you leave? He said, you know, you'll know when it's time. And I just know it's time. I have a grandchild who's going to be one, actually, the day that I leave for festival. So grandma's in hot water, but they're holding off the party till I get back. So I have been doing that. I have been babysitting for him 3 days a week, and it's just incredible to watch a new life grow and how fast they change and how amazing. And yes, we are doing our twinkle variations and he can already match pitch. You know, we got to do all that stuff because, you know, it's our family.
Yeah.
I don't know. I cannot give theater up. I do know that. And I have ideas, which I'm not going to share, but yeah, I will definitely move forward in art because I have to. I've always described myself to my students as an artist who teaches. Not a teacher who is good at arts. My first passion is music and theater. I think the surprise came for me when I had taught a choral person. I was a choral person initially in Janesville at a junior high school. And again, I just have to make art. So by the time I left Janesville, we were doing two musicals a year. We had a madrigal group. We had a swing choir. I shared with another woman, Jean Dragneau, who was so patient and wonderful with me as I came in with all this youthful energy. She was a wonderful musician, a wonderful human. We had a great time together. We had 150 voice junior high school choir with 50 guys.
Whoa.
It was just insane. So when I left Janesville, my husband was a musician, and he wanted to move to the Lake Geneva area and be closer to his employment because driving late at night was tough for him. And I thought, okay, well, this might be my moment to do my performer thing. So I auditioned and got into an Equity production of The Pirates of Penzance at Candlelight Dinner Theater. Worked there for about a year and a half, got my Equity card, then decided I wanted to be a mom. And decided I should stay home and be a mom. And then I decided that I would sing jazz on the weekends. And that's how I ended up in Kenosha.
Huh.
Because I worked with Rennick Ross, who was related to Ralph Houghton. So I got to meet the Houghtons and through that whole process and work with Ren for about 3 or 4 or 5, 6, 7 years, even past the time that I started here. And after 4 years, and Amy was going to go into, you know, full daycare or early, you know, kindergarten kind of stuff, I thought, you know, might be good to have a job. And I thought about continuing to be a performer, and I thought, well, that takes us away from her in the evening, which I wasn't real excited about. And then I contrasted my experience as a teacher to my experience as a performer. And I had one wonderful moment. As a performer, I was an understudy and did a lot of that work. And I went on and I walked down and the entire green room applauded me. And I thought, wow, that's like really cool that my peers think that I do a great job. And, you know, that was wonderful. And certainly you love performing and relating to the audience. But when you do a Vida 200 times, if I ever have to say Perón again in my life, it'll be too soon. So I thought, you know, there was that moment my seventh year of teaching in middle school when we were doing Bye Bye Birdie, and I had a packed house of parents, and I had an incredibly gifted group of kids. We actually sang 8-part Bernstein that year.
Whoa.
It was insane. The tunes from The Lark, which were just amazing, and they just loved it. But they were insanely talented kids, and I realized that the parents were there, and they were laughing because they were their kids, but not always. They were laughing because the kids really were funny.
Mm.
They were actually making theater, and it was actually working, and that was a huge thrill just to watch that. And I thought, you know, I think I better go back to teaching. So I called Ralph, and I said, how about Kenosha? I know they have a great music program. And he called Linda Uding, and I went in for an interview, and at that point they only had a subbing position for elementary music open. I said, okay, I'll figure that out. I haven't taught it, but okay. And then the day before new teachers came, the job at Reuther opened up. Reuther Central High School, the choral position there, the music position there. And Larry Simons interviewed me for that. And he said, I hope this is a fit. It's good. Maybe you have your professional life still. And I said, oh, it'll be fine. And I went over, and Shelley Henning was so stressed at that moment. She said, they think you're great. I don't have time. Welcome. You know, perfect.
Have at it.
He said, you're going to do a play? And I said, yeah, sure. And, you know, kind of walked down the hall, and the custodian gave me the tour. And I met Della Mauser, who was the facilities manager. And at that point, quite honestly, Greg, I didn't have access to a good piano until they met me. And I had a computer, which I'd never used, and one electric keyboard that worked, and a small filing drawer of Choral Fest music that was way beyond the capabilities of the children that were walking into my class. And I was going to teach guitar with no literature. And I thought, So I went to Ward Broughton in Madison and bought all the books that I'd used in my, because I taught guitar at my middle school job. And bought all those, brought them in, and by the middle of the first year, we did a production of Godspell, which I will never forget. Mm. Those kids were insane. I had one guy, all girls, and then he quit, so it was an all-girl cast of Godspell. And I, my one amazing story from that is I was only me. I mean, I didn't have anybody else to help because it was just a beginning. So I hired all my guys that I did my jazz work with, and some of them were top people from Chicago, and they were just friends, and they had the weekend open. I said, oh, great, good, come play. And they were wonderful. So they came into the last couple of rehearsals before we put the show up, and I had bought all of these tie-dyed, you know, one-size-fits-all outfits in Lake Geneva for the kids, and I put them up in the dressing room. I said, y'all are in charge. I don't care who's wears what. Just put it on your body. And there was one young woman, she just did not have a lot of experience with makeup and that kind of stuff. And the girls, I said, but you have to give me some time with the band. So the girls came down and they said, you have to come upstairs. And I said, no. I said, you guys, I really have to do this. It's kind of, you really have to function. No, you really have to come upstairs. I said, okay. And I walked upstairs, and this beautiful young woman who just hadn't had experience with this kind of stuff, the girls had told her that they would take care of her, and they did. And they gave her the best outfit, and they put makeup on, and she looked at herself, and there were just tears streaming down her face. And there were no words for the kindness and the generosity that was happening in that room. And
wow. So they weren't summoning you to solve a problem. They were summoning you to see this beautiful moment.
Thing that they had done.
Wow.
And it was just, I mean, these are the moments that we have.
Yeah.
This is what this does to children. And this is why I keep saying to everybody, unless you have done it and experienced it, you don't know the value of this. You know, we can teach math and English till the end of our days, and certainly they're important, very important. But if we lose that sense of connection and bravery to be with one another and take a risk, because that's a risk.
Yeah.
She took a risk. They took a risk. You know, there are no words for those moments. But that was our first production, and then I went to Larry and I said, I have to do Choral Fest, and I have like 15 people, and there's these giant choirs. I think I'm just going to do this. And, you know, Larry said, okay. And then we were in that rehearsal, you know, where those monster choirs sing, and my kids are just like, oh, my gosh, we're going to die, we're going to die, we're going to die. And I said, Larry, I have a band. You want to take us out of sequence. Do us last. You know, so they could breathe and be in the room. And then we sang one song, Bless the Lord My Soul, and Miss Nedra Lewis, who was a beautiful soloist, and Miss Tara Medina, who could, like, sing a killer high C at the end. They were frightened, but got through all of that fear. I walked up into the little room, you know, retaining room before we went on, and they were pretty scared. And they said, well, we don't sound like anybody else. And I said, you're going to be fine. Sort of like Godspell. You're going to be fine.
Yeah.
And we were at the beginning of the high school section, you know, the big deal, and they got up in there, and with all the girls with their beautiful dresses on, the black dresses, and we didn't have any of that. So I bought them black graduation robes, the cheap guys, but at least we were all dressed in the same thing, you know. So we had our little black robes on, and the band from Chicago and Rennick Ross, you know, who was the relative of Ralph Houghton, started to play, and they had little microphones to support them because there was only 15 of us, and they finally relaxed and just sang beautifully, and the whole place stood for them. The whole gymnasium at Tremper stood, and they just, their eyes were like saucers.
Mm.
And it was just amazing.
I was there. I was there. I remember that moment so very, very vividly. And it's really cool to just think, too, about how this wonderful thing that you have been part of in a sense, began with, in a sense, little or no, what we think of as sort of common ambition. I mean, with no grandiose plan.
It was problem solving.
Right.
It's important for children to always have dignity. And as a young teacher, I realized that It took me 3 years. As my dad used to say, teachers should probably pay the system for the first 3 years. And he's right. Because you got to find your way of relating to kids, getting the literature out and having them master it, but yet being there for them. And that's a whole, everybody has their own rhythm and their own style and their own way of doing it. And but by that time, I did know that. And being at Reuther with that incredible community, I cried when I left that. I actually cried all the way home for the first 3 months driving home from Bradford when I moved, because the intimacy of Reuther I really missed quite
sure.
a bit. But yeah, just that moment where they succeeded and they'd worked hard. They'd worked very hard to make that happen and to feel that power. But that's when Larry Simons came to me at the end of the year and said, "You want to do this for everybody?" And I said, "Sure." He said, "Well, how about you do a summer program?" And we did Annie. And that was a success. And then I met kids from across the district. And Reuther was a school where anybody could come for any reason. There were no limits on Reuther. So all of a sudden, we were doing shows the next year, and nobody else was doing musicals in the public system. Only St. Joe's was doing a musical. And the kids came and said, "Can we do this?" And I said, "I guess." So the kids from the district started coming and doing things at Reuther after school. Because we were the only people doing musicals in the public system at that point and on any consistent basis. I don't think there was anything at Tremper. Occasionally Bradford did things, but that was very occasional. And then my first parent group was the Myers. Kathy and Keith came in with a plate of cookies one night for the kids and said, "Can we stay and just, like, help?" And I was like, "Oh, sure." You know, so, I mean, yeah, it wasn't any big planned thing. It was just improv.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and in so many cases, responding to who is before you.
Yeah.
I mean, these people, whoever they might be, their gifts, their limitations, their experience, their inexperience.
Yep.
I'm reminded of the advice I was given by the great Alice Parker many years ago.
Oh, I love
it was,
her.
Yeah, it was my wife who actually asked her, "So what's your advice for a budding young composer," meaning me, and her advice was, "Write for people you know." I mean, don't just write, you know, for the whole universe. Write for your local high school choir, or write for your church choir, or write for a, you know, voice student that you especially love. But you know, you will tap into something deep and personal. And of course, on a different sort of level, on a different sort of canvas, that's sort of the story of what you've done over all these many years.
Oh,
is
yeah.
responding to the young people. For whom you are responsible to give a really meaningful experience and
exactly.
responding to what they can do, what they can deliver. And yeah. I suppose that's as important a story as anything here.
It is. And that's the beauty of teaching. And do we make a great amount of money? We make enough. You know, I know teachers talk about what we make and that kind of stuff. I'm going to say for me, it's been enough. And my life is full of so much more. Because we can't take what we make away. But I will have this forever.
Yeah. Holly Stanfield, the award-winning teacher. Lots of awards, well-deserved awards on your shelf. I know that isn't what this is about as far as you're concerned, but it does represent the outstanding work that you have done. And we want to remind people that they can come and see Between the Lines this Thursday and Friday, June 20th and 21st, in the Bradford High School Auditorium, where so many wonderful things have taken place over the years, and then cheer on the young people and the cast and crew as they head off to the International Thespian Festival for what, as you said so articulately earlier, brings this wonderful career to a close. Holly Stanfield, I've enjoyed each and every experience we've had of talking on the morning show over the years, and wish you very, very well in whatever this next chapter holds, your grandchild and everything else. And thanks for being my guest on the morning show.
Thank you. My heart will always be in Kenosha.
And it's a minute before 9 o'clock tomorrow on the morning show. Another farewell of sorts. Advice columnist Amy Dickinson, well known to public radio listeners for her many visits to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Her career as an advice columnist ends at the end of this month, and you'll hear from her tomorrow. By the way, to hear Holly Stanfield in the complete version of our interview, seek out the podcast version of The Morning Show. Look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, and